Today on Maine Calling, navigating the chaos of college admissions. Now is the season for launching soon-to-be high school graduates to the next level of their education. And this year is a particularly confusing one thanks to a confluence of major changes in the landscape. The Supreme Court's gutting of affirmative action, the return of standardized testing requirements at some colleges, and major delays in processing the federal financial aid eligibility form, known commonly as FAFSA. Some observers have dubbed this the craziest college application season ever, and it's left students trying to decide between colleges, colleges scrambling to figure out their budgets, and parents in a panic about how much this is all going to cost. I'm Keith Shortall, and today on the program we'll share the latest advice on how to proceed and ask the question, is it a good time to take a gap year? Maine Calling is coming right up.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. And by Welch & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welchforbes.com.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Deciding on which college to attend can be stressful. Figuring out how to pay for it only adds to that stress. For many high school seniors and their families, this has been a particularly difficult time. The rollout of the revised free application for federal student aid, known as FAFSA, has been anything but smooth. Today we'll get an update on how colleges are handling FAFSA-related delays and awarding financial aid packages, and we'll discuss other college options as well. My guests, Martha Johnson, a Director of Education with the Finance Authority of Maine, Stephanie Doyle, a College and Career Transition Coordinator at Casco Bay High School, and Lori LaChance, is President of Thomas College. And we invite you to join the conversation. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call. The number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. So, first of all, in the interest of disclosure, I have an 18-year-old who graduates from high school very soon, and we are in the midst of the Financial Aid Fun Fest. So for me, this is kind of, I guess, a free consultation, so thank you in advance. But I hope this will also be helpful to many of those of you who are out there listening, who are in the same situation or who will be within the next few years. So let's start off with kind of where we are. I read one recent analysis that I mentioned, I think, at the top, that declared this to be the craziest college admission season ever. Applications are up. Some kids are applying to as many as 30 colleges, I've read. Schools are trying to figure out who's going to actually show up. Standardized testing is back, as we mentioned. And on top of all of that, the FAFSA delay. So there's a lot to unpack. So let's take a deep breath, though, and put all this in perspective. And Martha Johnston, we'll start with you. Is this the craziest college admissions season ever?
Well, at the Finance Authority of Maine, we are hyper-focused on college affordability. So I think from that perspective, as far as the outreach, it is definitely one of the craziest years we've ever experienced, really kind of doubling our efforts, doing something completely preparatory in the fall to get people ready for the FAFSA, and then doing something wholly different January 1st once the FAFSA became available. But I think one of the most important things to recognize about this admissions class right now, these are the same kids who entered high school in the fall of 2020 at the start of the pandemic. And I just think that part of their experience can't be lost. And here they are in the craziest admissions and financial aid year that we've probably ever seen.
That's kind of bookends, I guess, for them in a way. Stephanie Doyle, you're in the business of helping kids make this transition. What's it been like from where you sit?
I think I echo a lot of what Martha said it has been stressful. I mean, I think kids and their families are worried. They see this May 1st deadline looming next week. A lot of them have not received financial aid packages. And, it's causing a lot of anxiety amongst families. And there's always that need to feel like you have to know, what is next. So I think a lot of the work that we're doing here at Casco Bay is that, like, take a deep breath. Everything's going to work out. We just need to be patient, and just try to meet each kid and their family where they're at. I think that it's just been really vital for us in the midst of all of this to stay as calm and grounded as possible, in order to help support our students. And just a major shout out to Fame and to Martha for all the work that they've been doing and continue to do. They are like our lifeline at Casco Bay, so we're super grateful for everything that you guys are doing.
Laurie LaChance, what's this whole thing been like from the college standpoint?
Well, I think from a small private college like ours, to say it's been stressful would be a major understatement. It's been really crazy because usually by May 1st, which is next week, we've landed the majority of our class. And now we're looking at numbers where, the applications from Maine are down, the FAFSA filings are way down, I mean, way down. And it becomes just a major move into hope and trust that this is all going to work out. We've always served first gen. We pride ourselves on that. We've always served Pell eligible, and we always meet them right where they are. And so that's how we're responding. We are doing every kind of outreach possible to help them get through this process so they can live into their dream.
And it might be helpful to understand what's happening now, to go back before some of the changes and look at the old rhythm that we got used to, the old schedule. And we'll do that in a moment. But you also mentioned that applications were down. And so I also want to put this conversation in the context, in the larger context of what's been happening over the last decade. According to Pew, college enrollment among young Americans has been declining over the past decade. 2 years ago, it was the total number between 18 and 24-year-olds enrolled in college was down by over a million from its peak back in 2011. So, let's start with where we're at in terms of how many kids are going to college or not going to college. Martha?
From a FAFSA perspective, why don't I share a little bit about what's happening in Maine? And that might put some of that into context. And I'm sure Lori and Stephanie will have a lot to add from the high school and the college perspective. So in Maine, overall, all of our students, whether they are high school seniors or they are what we would call returning students or adult learners, right now our FAFSA filing is down 38% what it was last year at this time. So we have a lot of work to do as it relates to all of our students, and I think especially our returning students, so people who are already in college. A lot of the high school students have great support with their school counselors, and they do have support at the college level too. I don't want to imply that they don't, but I think sometimes the rhythm of that cycle you were talking about is very focused on that high school cycle, and so that's one thing I just want to say about our returning students. The other thing about high school seniors, just to put it into perspective, nationally, school senior FAFSA completions are down 27%, and they're down 20% in Maine. So we're doing better than what's happening across the nation. And I'm really proud to say we've been doing better for many, many years. Our FAFSA completion rates for high school seniors generally have always been slightly better than the national. So I think there is good news there. And as Stephanie and Lori have said, none of us has stopped. We are still continuing to do every sort of outreach that's available to get those FAFSAs submitted. And especially when I hear May 1, we've got the commitment date to colleges and universities May 1, and many colleges have moved that date to accommodate what's going on. But we also have a May 1 Maine State grant deadline, and we actually moved that deadline. because of everything that's going on. So last week we made the decision to lift our May 1 deadline. So anyone who submits a FAFSA after May 1, as long as we still have funding available, they will be considered eligible for that really critical source of Maine funding. But I'm going to stop there because I definitely would love Lori and Stephanie to weigh in on the value of higher education, at least as the perspective of what the students and families are seeing. And I think that goes to a lot of what you're saying about the numbers changing over the last 10 years.
Yeah, Stephanie, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I mean, I think what comes to mind, so, you know, at Casco Bay, we require all students to apply to at least one college. We don't say that you have to go to college, but we're really trying to have kids have plan, you know, A, B, and C, and D, knowing that, you know, in the fall, and especially with the FAFSA this year, you know, there's a lot of feelings around that. And so what you think you might want to do in the fall is going to be very different from what you decide to do in June. So we really have encouraged all of our students to kind of move forward with the process. And, you know, once they have all their information, you know, in terms of what their plan is, you know, at that point, you know, let's meet together, students, families, and the staff here at Casco Bay to kind of look at what all the options are. I think we know, we let our students know, you know, the value of a college education is incredibly important. And we show them, you know, salaries for those that have attended and who don't, and just are really transparent about that. You know, having said that, though, like, we would never want to put a student in a position where they were, you know, taking out huge loans just because they felt like this was the next step for them to do. And we're really trying to have folks be mindful and smart about the decisions that they're making, knowing that, you know, perhaps they might need, you know, like a gap year just to kind of get their legs under them, and just not wanting folks to rush into something if they don't feel like they have all the information.
Yeah. Lori LaChance, is that decline over the past 10 years that we talked about there, is that simply people coming to sort of making a value analysis of the cost, the rising costs of college education? What is it that you think is playing out there?
Well, I'm sure it's a combination of a couple of factors. One certainly being the cost and the fear of the cost itself as one of the largest investments you'll ever make in your life, which has caused the colleges to have to really focus on sharing what the return on that investment is and understanding it's college is not an expenditure, it is an investment in your future earnings potential. So I think the sheer cost and not understanding the rest of the story does scare some folks off. There's also been a really public sentiment that it's not worth it, which influences young people. And even more so, the lure of being able to earn a very high hourly wage in this very tight labor market that's taking students either out of college or away from even trying college, because it seems like an answer. And just to put a finer point of a couple of things going on here, since 2016, the sheer number of Maine high school graduates has gone down 2.6%. That in of itself is a challenge for all of us. But the bigger one is on top of that, that the decline in the number who even choose to go on to college has dropped 21.4%. So, you know, you're taking a big segment of students of a lower group of students and taking them right out of the equation about even thinking about going to college. When you add another barrier, like not easily understanding what it's going to actually cost you, it just creates a big downward slide.
So simultaneously with all this decline over time, though, as I've heard reported, that the numbers of applications coming into some schools is way up over the last 2 years. I read that Bowdoins are up around over 13,000, which is a high number for even a small school. So what's going on there? Is it fewer people applying, but they're just applying everywhere? To any of you who might know what's going on there.
Well, looking at the three very elite colleges in Maine, you just can't compare them with the university system, community college, or the smaller privates, because they have waiting lists and they are able to recruit worldwide. And it is true, the Maine colleges are doing exceptionally well at getting people to come from other states and international. Our international has gone through the roof in applications. We've never had this many. International and out of state is where all the growth has occurred.
Martha, you're shaking your head. Yes.
I agree. I think it's hard to compare the two sets of schools. That is for sure. And I'd love to hope, really, really hope, that while that national sentiment about is it worth it, I'm hoping we're starting to see that tide turn, and that we see those increased applications, because people do realize education after high school in whatever form is right for them, whether it's trade school, community college, four-year school, really is going to benefit them personally on an economic level. And then, of course, on the state level and all of our workforce shortage needs. So that's been something that a coalition of people for many years have been working on, especially through the Maine Spark Coalition. So, Maine keeps talking about it. This is what we need from our workforce. So I'm very hopeful that that tide is turning, at least in Maine.
So let's go to the where we were before all of this happened. We'll jump here into the FAFSA mosh pit. A few years ago, I guess my understanding is the Congress decided, it was in 2020, we've got to fix this system. I think the old system had been in place for decades and was run on an IBM mainframe, through using COBOL or whatever. So they decided, we've got to transition this. They want to move it to the cloud and make it more user friendly and with fewer questions. All that, I guess, is sort of happening, but not with the smoothness that we would like. Congress is blaming the administration. The administration is blaming Congress. Sounds familiar. So we won't get into all of that, but let's talk about, just to help people understand how it should work. When is your FAFSA supposed to be ready? What does it tell you? Why do you need it? Let's just go through for those of us who kind of are learning this the wrong way around.
Right. That's okay. So you're absolutely right. There were two pieces of legislation that came together to make this happen. And these represent changes, that haven't occurred in the last 40 years as it relates to the FAFSA. So changing that application process and that platform, as you mentioned, moving it to a different environment and a more secure environment. But then also a simplification act, which really said, we want to make this application as simple as possible for the people of the United States who apply for federal financial aid. And we want your information to come directly from the IRS. No more keying in things while you're looking at your tax return. So we want to simplify it and we want to bring it into the 21st century. So the dream is, that it really will take just about 15 minutes for each person, because now this is a roles-based form and we can go down those weeds, but we won't. We won't go down that rabbit hole yet. But the dream is it will happen that quickly. And so that families and students, it'll be processed within 1 to 3 days, and that information will get transmitted to the colleges and universities. It'll get loaded into their systems, and we'll be back in a world where that process starts every fall. Financial aid offices are gearing up, and as soon as students are accepted, they're able to put out award notifications. So how much financial aid did this student qualify for at our college or university? And I truly, truly believe we will get there. What we're experiencing this spring, and again, we're not going to even discuss who's at fault. That's not going to get us anywhere. We just want to get through it. We will be there. And I think for schools like for Thomas, and I know for our work at FAME and Stephanie, that really will allow us to focus more and more on our most vulnerable populations who really need that extra support making it through, in my case, the financial aid process, and looking at that 38% of high school graduating students who don't go on to do anything. They're not sure what they want to do. So I think in the end, making it simpler for the average family is going to free all of us up to focus on the people who need that extra support.
And we will get into some of the, I guess, specific changes in the new improved FAFSA. I would have voted to change the acronym, by the way, first of all, something a little sexier than FAFSA, but I'm not in charge. In the meantime, however, we're going to take a quick break, join the conversation. The number is 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. And today we're talking about making college decisions, financial concerns, and different options for college-bound students. My guests are Stephanie Doyle, College and Career Transition Coordinator at Casco Bay High School, Lori LaChance, President of Thomas College, and Martha Johnston, Director of Education at the Finance Authority of Maine. Join the conversation. Email us at talk@mainepublic.org or comment on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call, the number 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Will O'Shea. He's past president and current board member of the Maine Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators. He's also associate director of financial aid for Maine College of Art and Design in Portland. Will, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me today.
So you're hearing, I don't know what you've heard of the conversation here, but you're familiar with the FAFSA process. What's been the number one concern from where you sit about the delays and problems in the process?
So yeah, from a financial aid administrator point of view, you know, our association here in Maine represents about 28 schools, about 105 active members, which are active practicing financial administrators. And great folks like Martha and everybody else at FAME who are great to work with are also associate members. So we're about 125 members strong. So what we're hearing is mainly software issues. So, for example, the Department of Ed had released, you know, some flags to indicate if FAFSAs were affected or not affected. So for some schools in Maine, that's not a problem, depending on the financial aid software that they use. For other larger school systems in Maine, it's a huge problem because they just can't keep up with the number of errors that are being produced by the Department of Ed via the FAFSA. And just to give you a quick, you know, background on financial aid administrators, and many folks at FAME, you know, used to be practicing financial aid administrators as well, so they understand, you know, deeply. We're kind of built to be perfectionists, and we're held to a very high standard by the Department of Ed. You know, when it comes to annual federal audits, we get audits once in a while from, you know, from Finance Authority of Maine on a Maine State grant. But what I'm hearing from membership is they just can't keep up. It's, you know, many of my colleagues in this state and also other states. I'm a sitting board member on EASFA, which is the Eastern Association of Student Finance Administrators. They're pulling 14, 15-hour days just trying to keep up because they really care about one thing, and that's a student. But what we're hearing really is what we're hearing here in Maine and actually across the entire Eastern Seaboard in the United States is people are leaving this profession left and right because they're burning out, and they don't feel like they're getting the support they need from Department of Education.
And so you don't have a sense that things are going to be resolved anytime soon? Is that your sense?
No, I mean, the data is getting better. And I'm with Martha. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, dive into the negative here because that doesn't solve a thing. So things are getting better, however, compared to previous financial aid cycles where the FAFSA was available in October. You know, we're way behind. To your earlier guest here too, you know, this is a life decision for many students. So again, our financial administrators are doing the best they can to help students, but, you know, those first-generation students, they are the ones that we're really worried about because they don't have the support systems in place on their own or, you know, a parent who went to college to help them, you know. So it's really what we're hearing from membership is really trying to make enrollment goals. Really, that's the main concern this year. I mean, you know, Martha alluded to, you know, declining enrollment. But, I mean, there are – I mean, if you guys read the New York Times at all, I mean, there has been one or two schools already in Vermont that have closed because they're so tuition-dependent that they had to close their doors or they're getting ready to close. So that is happening all across the country because it's a huge economic impact, federal student aid, on small, particularly smaller communities. So that's what I'm hearing from membership.
Yeah. What advice would you give to students and families who are – worried about the current situation, and on top of that, you know, the cost of post-secondary education?
I would definitely tell them to try the FAFSA now because it seems to be working a lot better than it was back in January, February, and March. And to not give up their dream of pursuing college, you know, if that means they're going to take a gap year, then that's great. But please don't give up because, I mean, like Martha alluded to, you know, it's a life choice, but it's, you know, it's going to help them potentially earn, you know, they're going to earn more with a college degree, and that shows that. But as far as it being affordable, was that the question? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, just start the process early. You know, FAME has, you know, the Finance Authority of Maine has many great tools at their disposal, and they, like I said, they've got a great team. And I would submit to every parent to start early. That's the main thing. You know, we encounter many people, you know, in our industry, or I'm sorry, you know, with parents of students, and it's always, they just always seem to start too late, you know. So there are many products out there that you can start in, you know, and I'm not trying to sell products for FAME, but there are many products out there, you know, 529s, you know, or just start saving money for your kid. But if you're beyond that point, I mean, certainly, you know, take the time as a student and a parent to really look at outside scholarship opportunities too. There's so many, there's billions of dollars that goes unused a year nationally because students are not applying for outside scholarships. So really get into a systematic approach when applying for scholarships, and yeah. You know, the more you do it, then the better chance you have of getting an outside scholarship. So, I mean, that's one way to make it affordable. Certainly, you know, I mean, as a student, certainly, you know, work as often as you can during the summers and just save, and, you know, and pick the school that you can afford. Right. That's really the main thing too. Just be realistic with yourself. And if something's out of reach as far as a school, you know, maybe do, you know, Maine has free community college for another year, so maybe do that for a year and then transfer in as a sophomore and save yourself a year.
Yeah. Yep. Interesting information. Appreciate your time. Thanks so much. Will O'Shea is with the Maine Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators, and he's with the Maine College of Art and Design. Joining us now is, I think she's joining us now. Let's try. Julia Rogers. She's president emeritus of the Gap Year Association, a national nonprofit dedicated to making the gap year option more accessible and common for young adults. She's also an accredited gap year consultant and founder of En Route Consulting. Julia Rogers, welcome to the program. So,
thank you so much for having me.
I naively thought entering this program that like the gap year was just an idea that was you know occasionally popped up when you weren't really sure what you were doing, but as I studied you and your organization, you really are. It's fair to say you're like an advocacy organization. You would recommend gap years for certain students, and you make a case in this, it's official because you had a TED talk, but you make a case that there are real benefits to this. It's not simply, you know, punting for a year because you don't have your act together.
Oh, exactly. You know, a gap year, as defined by, you know, the Gap Year Association and others, is really this intentional period of personal growth and career exploration that is seen as a bridge between you know, life stages. So, you know, in today's talk, we're kind of framing it as this, you know, gateway between high school and higher ed or, you know, other types of career development. But it is this opportunity for a young adult to develop the skills and mindset and, you know, just understanding of themselves in order to make intentional choices about their future.
So you're seeing, are we seeing a rise in the number of students taking a gap year?
Yes, steadily over the past couple decades. In fact, this has been a movement that's kind of growing and becoming more, you know, known amongst the general population. But we really saw a spike in just general nomenclature around the use of the term gap year during COVID, when so many students opted out of the, you know, online classroom experience and did other things instead. And since then, we've seen just, you know, more and more students opting into a gap year. But, you know, in this, the context of this conversation, what we're also talking about is this unintentional gap year of a student not necessarily saying, like, I'm taking a gap year to grow and explore the world, but I'm actually taking a gap year in reaction to my financial aid opportunities not coming into fruition. So in this case, we're really talking about a mindset shift from an unintentional gap year into an intentional gap year framework.
And by gap year, we're not talking about, you know, hanging out on the couch and playing video games for a year. We're talking about setting yourself up with an experience, traveling, working, internships. Can you talk about the kind of the number of options that that you would recommend when doing this intentional choice?
I think that one of the most amazing things that happens when I start talking about gap years is that people kind of unlock this creativity in their brains around what are the possibilities, because it really is a very endless number of things that you can do with a gap year that are really tied in with an individual's personal goals and motivations. But they do include things like you just mentioned. So students might volunteer locally or abroad. They could travel. They could do internships. They can do AmeriCorps programs. They can do self-guided exploration. They can pursue personal projects. It really is a fully customizable form of education that can be accomplished locally, regionally, or further afield, as well as for just about any budget as well, including no money.
Yeah, I can hear some parents' teeth grinding right now out there, concerned that, well, if my child takes a gap year and says they're going back to college, they never will. But you say you found that research suggests that that's not the case.
That's right. And that's another important factor when we talk about intentionality, because when we look at the statistics behind intentional gappers, so those are people who are saying, I'm taking a gap year before the next thing. We see incredible outcomes from those students. We see higher GPAs once they do matriculate. We see a very high matriculation rate to college, a 90% plus of students starting their college experience, you know, within a year of starting their gap time. We also see students more civically engaged on campus and graduating sooner. And that's kind of the other side of the conversation, is that a lot of students, you know, we get them to start college, but we're having a lot of trouble as a nation getting them to finish with an undergraduate degree, and especially within that 4-year ideal time frame for, you know, both the educational benefits and financial benefits of getting that education. So we kind of need to think about, like, the overall outcome of what we're hoping for our young adults, as well as the implications of it.
And just to wrap this up, you see this as the process we're going through here is that we're to think of it as we're creating a well-adjusted citizen, not just cranking out another college grad.
Exactly. You know, we're really trying to create a generation of students who know enough about themselves and the world around them to engage fully in the world. That means, you know, developing their own personal skills, budgeting, financing, you know, all of those life skills they need to live independently, as well as helping them develop that self-motivation so they have clarity around what they might want to study in higher ed, or that they, you know, maybe they want to go into the workforce, but they know why they're going to vocational school, because they spent their year doing hands-on carpentry work, and then they decide that they want to go get a degree or a vocational certificate in that realm. So we're giving them this opportunity to explore without needing to make those finite decisions, so that when it comes time to do that, they're doing it with a lot more intentionality.
All right. Thank you so much, Julia Rogers. Very interesting. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Julia Rogers, President Emeritus of the Gap Year Association and an accredited Gap Year Consultant. She's founder of Enroute Consulting. We're going to take another quick break. The phone number to join is 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we're talking about college options, in particular issues with the FAFSA, what to consider when deciding when, which college rather, to attend and when. Joining me, Lori LaChance, president of Thomas College, Stephanie Doyle, college and career transition coordinator at Casco Bay High School, and Martha Johnston, director of education, Finance Authority of Maine. Share your questions or comments. Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, the number 1-800-399-3566. Let's bring in a call. We'll go to Ed in York. Hi, Ed. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hey, great show. Education has been my hobby for like 12 or 13 years. The thing that I'm wondering about, it gets back to the FAFSA again, is this equation that nobody seems to talk much about, and that is COA minus EFC equals need. And what happens is the families initially fill out the FAFSA, and they're told what they should be paying to help their child student go to school, and then the student gets this letter from a institution of higher education and says, hey, you can get to go to this particular school for only, you know, $5,000-$7,000 a year, when it actually costs $80,000 or $90,000, based on all these different scholarships that they'll receive and whatever. But at the end, the student has no idea what that school costs. It's not written on any of the offers. Parents are expected to pay between $60,000 and $80,000 at the end of the four years. And then at the end, the kid gets the bill from the parents and says, here you go. And now they're paying, instead of on a couple of $100 a month for $20,000 to $25,000, they're paying $1,000 a month for around $80,000 or $90,000. I'm wondering why we don't talk more about this.
Well, I guess we could start now, and I'm going to ask Lori to go first, just because, Lori, I think you have to leave us, right?
I have a little bit of time.
You have a little bit of time. Okay.
I have some extra time. Oh, I was waiting to hear what Martha's answer was.
Okay, well, let's go to Martha then. Yeah, thank you.
Sure. So part of the new changes with the FAFSA actually did include a significant change in how they calculate what our caller was referring to as an EFC, an expected family contribution. And they shifted that terminology to be called the Student Aid Index, so an SAI. What goes around comes around. It was called that many decades ago, and that tells you how long I've been doing this. Mm-hmm. But I think the other thing that happened with FAFSA simplification is there did become greater transparency and understanding whether or not you'd qualify for a Pell Grant, which is really the kind of base federal grant eligibility when you file the FAFSA. So that was actually a huge and wonderful change. And knowing, really being able to have conversations up front and having a better idea for the student whether or not they might have access to a Pell Grant. So that's really good. The caller's referring to cost of attendance, COA, minus, in this case now, SAI, Student Aid Index, and there's something called unmet need. So that, or need, that's a need calculation. And so it is that need calculation that colleges are filling, if you will, with federal grants, state grants, in our case, Maine State Grant, other scholarships the student might bring in from outside organizations. Many colleges actually, there are now requirements about sharing the cost of attendance if you are a college that receives federal student aid. I'm not going to say that it's not necessarily complicated sometimes to understand if you're not someone who works in that industry. So we're used to using that language. We're used to navigating what those numbers are on a financial aid website for a college or university. But there are requirements that colleges actually post those costs. They provide something called a net calculator to help students understand upfront when they're going through the college search process how much they might qualify for. So there has been a lot of movement, especially through the federal government and through schools' participation in federal aid programs, to try to achieve that uniformity. It's not that schools weren't transparent, but the uniformity of that information, so it was easy for students to compare apples to apples. So I guess the other thing I'll just say is that Stephanie made a great point, which is you don't want someone to just jump into 4 years of school because they think that's what they're supposed to do, and then they take out student loans in a way that wasn't as informed as it might have or could have been. And Lori made a great point about return on investment, right? So these are big, complicated decisions and they're lifelong decisions, so that when you make those decisions, you understand, yeah, I'll have a student loan payment for X number of years after I graduate. And as long as you know that upfront and you are making an informed decision, that's what we want to help you do. And if it's not for you, then we'll find another path. Maybe that path is going to be free community college for a couple of years and transfer. There's all sorts of opportunities, but it's about being an informed consumer. And I think we are all in agreement that colleges and universities are working every day toward that end. So I'll get off my soapbox there. Well,
no, it's good. It's really complicated. But Lori, let me ask you now then, are you confident that on the in terms of transparency, that colleges such as yours, schools like yours, are making it known to parents and borrowers what they're borrowing?
We make a huge effort in that. And we've worked with FAME on understanding finances and financial decisions. We work with our students. Most of the students at the college are required to take a personal finance course and have that ability to learn the basics of what you're signing up for when you sign up for a loan. What are taxes? I mean, that was a shock to me when I graduated from college, being first gen, you know, oh, you got to pay what, you know. So we've been working very hard to help them understand their choices. One choice we give for affordability is we offer all of our bachelor's degrees in a 3-year format for no extra money. They can earn their degree in 3 years. And if they want to, they can start working right after that, or they can stay an extra year and graduate with their peers at the age of 22, 23 with a master's degree and higher earnings potential. So there are many ways to get that information across so you make a very informed decision.
Seth writes, my younger son and some of his peers are seriously considering undergraduate degree programs in Europe. Not study abroad, but an actual degree. There are a number of programs in English, especially for degrees in business. Tuition costs are far lower, in the range of $3,000 to $4,000 a year. Food and lodging are typically left to the student to arrange. What advice or resources would you have to give to students who are considering this option? I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with what the listeners talking about.
I can take that, Keith. I think you know, it's interesting because I believe that we've seen a major increase in students who are very curious about attending college in Canada and overseas. I think kids are really thinking about like how expensive college in the United States is, and you know, we have a bunch of students who have attended university overseas. And it's been really fascinating to stay in touch with them. And just the other day, I popped on a FaceTime call with a former student who is in the Netherlands right now studying. And I think for us, like our students who are attending schools abroad are like our greatest resource. And I think there's, you know, pros and cons to both of them. But in terms of affordability, it is significantly cheaper. I know many colleges and universities also have campuses abroad. I do still think that you are paying the cost of an American college system, but attending college abroad. So I know that those are some options, but there's no doubt you look at the price tag of schools overseas and they are significantly cheaper. And again, I think that's a really, you know, interesting, it's like an interesting idea that a lot of kids are grappling with. And then, you know, there's pros and cons, as I said, on both sides, because I think there is that desire to live in another country. And then it's also kind of noting that you are really far away from your family, and, you know, helping kids tease out those nuances is always fruitful conversations to have.
And do you forego the traditional financial aid system if you go to a different country, right?
Right.
For the most part, you do. There are certain countries that actually have agreements with the U.S. and they'll process federal student loans. So you're not taking any federal grants overseas. But there are going to be some opportunities to get your traditional direct student loan, even if you're attending a campus, you know, say in the UK. So those opportunities do exist. And but I think, like Stephanie was mentioning, you know, at the end of the day, overall, the price tag could be cheaper or less expensive. But I think it's just understanding, you know, those incidental expenses, obligations around getting your visa, making sure you understand those kind of things that are really out of my wheelhouse, but what the things I would think about if I had a student that was pursuing that opportunity.
Before we run out of time, this is sort of back to the FAFSA, the new improved FAFSA, but it was a point I wanted to ask about, which is in my notes, it says the new FAFSA ends the discount for families with more than one child in mm-hmm. college. Which to me sounds bad, but could Martha, can you explain what that is, why, and why, what we should think of it?
Yeah, I mean, there's different philosophies around why that change was made. That, you know, for many decades, people were getting a discount, you know, for having their children close together. And now you're right, there's no longer that opportunity to have your student aid index cut in half if there are two people in college. You know, my sense is that was seen as a more fair way to approach the eligibility and financial aid system over the course of an entire family's lifespan, so to speak, as it relates to getting ready and financing their students' education. Certainly at the Finance Authority of Maine, I think Will mentioned this, you know, obviously we would encourage, you know, at a very young age, start saving as soon as possible, whether it's in traditional savings accounts or investing in a 529 account, taking advantage of the Alfond grant and the matching grants to incentivize you to save for education after high school. Again, any education after high school, trade school, college, university, 2 year school. So that certainly was one of those changes. A family can actually ask a financial aid office to consider a special circumstance related to when they have two people in the household in college. So that door isn't necessarily shut for good, but there will be a conversation with the financial aid administrator and a professional judgment, a determination made on their part about that circumstance as it relates to the family's situation.
Only a couple of minutes left here. I did want to follow up, though, on the conversation about the gap year. Stephanie, is that something that you talk with your students about? And are you seeing more and more of that? And how do you see that fitting into the overall future education plan?
Yeah, I think over, you know, the past 10 years or so, the number of students taking gap years has definitely increased. You know, I've been doing this for over 15 years, and I think that there was, you know, I was kind of laughing at whoever made the comment about, like, you know, your kids sitting on the couch playing computer games for a year, right? Like, isn't that everyone's fear that if my kid takes a gap year, that will be what the rest of their life will look like? You know, I would say that we have seen an increase in gap years for sure. And kids have just been doing really, really rad things. And I would say that it's been really inspiring to see. You know, the way that we approach kind of next steps and leaving Casco Bay is that we just want every kid to have a plan. And whether that be a four-year college, trade school, work, travel, whatever it is, you know, we just want kids to have plans that they feel good about, and also let them know that, like, hey, this might be what you're doing for the next 6 months, right? Yeah. This might be what you're doing for the next year. This is not, you know, because I'm doing, you know, I'm working next year and I have to live at home, that, like, you will do that for the rest of your life. So
yeah. We're almost sorry to cut you off, but I wanted to give Lori one last chance here before we, Lori, last chance. sorry. In the 30 seconds or so, any advice to parents listening right now?
I would just like to comment, since we have long served first gen and Pell eligible kids, what sounds really good and attractive, like a gap year or studying abroad, it may not be as accessible to first gen and lower income. They're going to have to go to work. And once they go to work, the likelihood that they will stop earning an income and step out for college is almost impossible.
All right. And with that, we're out of time. Thank you, all of you, so much. It was really an interesting hour, and we could go on and on. Unfortunately, we can't. Martha Johnston, Director of Education at the Finance Authority of Maine. Stephanie Doyle, College and Career Transition Coordinator at Casco Bay High School. And Laurie LaChance is President of Thomas College. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can visit Maine Calling, the Maine Calling website, to sign up for our weekly newsletter. Or you could also, if you're interested, send a voice message directly to the Maine Calling team by downloading the Maine Public Vox Pop app. It's quick, easy, and you can get the Vox Pop app wherever you get your smartphone apps. Tomorrow on Maine Calling, we will not be air live at 11 because we are preempted. I'm Keith Shortall.